of America? It is true that when I took up a deep interest in Krishna consciousness, in bhakti, there was only one problem I had. Yes, I read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, 4 hours a day for 6 months straight before I would even attend any gathering at the temple. I'm from New York City, and New York City is neither east or west. Everyone in New York knows they are the best. So I thought, what is this bhakti knowledge? What is this Bhagavad Gita? How can it actually be applied to our life? When I finally started to chant Hare Krishna, because I had read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam for so long, but how did I start to chant Hare Krishna? Not one round a day, but one bead a day. New Yorkers are very skeptical. I said, I will only chant one bead, and then I will see. But by associating with devotees, I very quickly began to practice Lord Krishna's instructions. But there was only one problem, only one thing that challenged me, that upset my faith. There's only one difficulty. It wasn't the regular principles, the four rules. It wasn't the chanting of japa. By that time, I had increased from one bead a day to chanting quite a few rounds a day. So what was that one problem that was an obstacle for me to make spiritual progress? The problem was I could not understand why Srila Prabhupada criticized New York. In his lectures, he would say, it's a noisy place, it's a dirty place. I said, doesn't he understand? This is heaven. There's no place like it in the universe. The city that never sleeps. Non-stop action. That was the only problem. The drama that you saw, of course, it was exaggerated. But it is true that the West seems to offer the full freedom. I deal with Indian students who go to Australia to study, and they all tell me the same thing. Here in Australia, we can experiment. We can do so many things. And there's no relatives, no family members to watch us. They tell me that they're attracted by life in the West because it seems to be free of all controls, free of all don't do this, don't do that. This so-called freedom looks so attractive. I can just let my senses go in any direction. No one will criticize me. And then you consider traditional life in India. Of course, India is changing so rapidly. But if you consider the traditional life, there seemed to be always a ritual for every little thing you do. And there's always family members watching you. Grandparents that you have to listen to. Every step, there seems to be some kind of dharma you have to follow. Whereas in the West, dharma. There seems to be nothing. Let's go to the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The part where Arjuna is giving Krishna reasons why he shouldn't fight. Arjuna says, first of all, if this battle happens, this Kurukshetra war happens, so many elders will die. So many family men. These warriors are family men. And they're the elders in their dynasty. They'll be dead. And when the elders are no longer present, who will make sure that all the proper rituals, the Kula Dharma, is followed? Without the elders, gradually the family will start to break down. There'll be immorality. There'll be unwanted children born. Unwanted children means children born in not proper circumstances. What more? There'll be no more community welfare projects for the upliftment of society. The essential principles of social harmony for spiritual advancement, that'll all be lost. Arjuna presented to Krishna, I have heard that those who destroy the family traditions will reside in hell. Those who destroy the eternal family principles, Kula Dharma Sanatana. You destroy those things and you have to take a reaction, a hellish reaction. Arjuna is pleading with Krishna. We cannot fight this war. Society will be finished because no longer will the proper rituals be followed. No longer will the proper ethics and morality be followed. What was Krishna's answer? Did Krishna respond in a Western way? You might think so, because Krishna said, Arjuna, you're speaking big words, but you don't know what you're talking about. You're a fool. Why did Krishna say that? It is not that Krishna is rejecting the family duties, rejecting the family rituals and principles for harmony and progressive spiritual development. No. Krishna is pointing out that Arjuna, the real purpose, the real point of the Kula Dharma, the real purpose of all the rituals and all the morality and traditional ways of doing things, the real purpose of all that is to surrender to me, to do what I say. So if I say fight, that is the ultimate truth. And how then can you say to me, oh, but what about Dharma? Krishna is Dharma himself. So it takes some purified intelligence to understand Bhagavad Gita. Because it can seem that Krishna is rejecting tradition. Krishna is rejecting all rituals. Krishna is rejecting all the principles of social harmony. Krishna is not accepting Arjuna's presentation. There'll be a hellish situation created for society. And also there'll be a hellish situation created for those who destroy these family traditions. I've heard this, Krishna. Arjuna makes such an intelligent presentation. Anushushrama, I have heard from authorities. In other words, Arjuna is saying, it's not just my opinion, it's not just my idea. I have heard through parampara, through the authorized chain of guru and disciple, I have heard that if we create a situation in which the family system is destroyed, all of society will be devastated. Why is it that Krishna didn't accept this? Because Krishna wants you to know that the whole purpose of all the rituals, of all the family traditions, the whole purpose is to do what Krishna wants, to become purified, to make spiritual advancement, so that what Krishna says, you will do. Just like at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, Kanishye vachanam tava, I will act according to what you say. Nashta moha smritya labdha. Krishna, my illusion is now gone. I will act according to your instruction. That is the perfection of Dharma. That is the perfection of the family traditions. That is the culmination of all the religious principles that the family follows, all the rituals. The whole point is to do what Krishna wants. So that is why Krishna did not accept Arjuna's presentation. Even though, speaking on the ordinary level of affairs, Arjuna was right. But Arjuna had momentarily forgotten what is the purpose of all the rituals, of all the Kula Dharma, of all the traditions. The purpose is to become purified. The purpose is to make some spiritual advancement so that you will accept what Krishna says. There is an advantage to all these rituals, to all these family traditions, and there is a disadvantage. The disadvantage is that if you follow all these rituals and family traditions blindly, mechanically, the whole inner meaning of the system becomes lost. And that is what you see in the East happening so much. The understanding of the essence, why we're following this Kula Dharma, why we're following all these family traditions and rituals, the meanings become lost. And therefore, the young people, they don't want to follow anymore. The young persons like you, you're thinking, just because my grandmother and grandfather did like this, why should I? And no one can give you the essential reason why you should follow those things. So therefore, when you look at the West, it seems, oh, they are free of all this. Nothing stops their behavior. They don't have to follow all these old-fashioned traditions, all these old-fashioned rituals. So that is the disadvantage of the traditions, the rituals. When you forget that all these rituals and traditions are meant to have a connection with Sanatan Dharma, the eternal loving service given by the spirit soul to the supreme soul, Krishna. When you forget that, then the rituals and traditions become hollow, like just shells with nothing inside. And therefore you reject it. Why should I do these things blindly, mechanically? Who can remember why we're doing these things? Smashing the coconuts. What is the point? Doing the... Why are we doing that? The whole purpose becomes lost. Following traditions and rituals without knowledge is a great disadvantage. Yes, for a while, even if you do something blindly, you may get some benefit. But gradually, you see. As you can see what has happened today. You don't want to follow these traditions anymore because the purpose has become lost. When the purpose, the essence becomes lost, this produces a very dangerous situation in society. Because I have seen that those who once knew the traditions and then reject them, they become the most dangerous. More than those who never knew the traditions. If you had some knowledge of what is the proper path in life, and you turn your back on that proper knowledge, there are reactions more severe than those who never knew what are the proper principles of human advancement. India has a great responsibility to the world. It is the land of Dharma. But if in the land of Dharma, the understanding of actually what is Dharma becomes lost, then a very dangerous situation happens. What is that dangerous situation? Some young persons will very vigorously reject the traditions. These grandmother fairy tales. Hindu granny folk stories. We have nothing to do with that anymore. So your reaction becomes very extreme. Or, what is also dangerous, you just follow them blindly with no understanding, doing meaningless rituals and meaningless traditions because the essence is lost. That also creates a negative effect because when the parents do these rituals and traditions blindly, the children, their children, become repelled by this. The children become averse to this. The children are, what is this? What are our parents doing? I have seen this myself. What are our parents doing? Just like the children of students from India who went to study in Australia, New Zealand, and then later became residents there, working professionals, and then had children there. And the children are looking at their parents like, what are you doing? These little rituals and traditions you're hanging on to, what is the point? Can you explain to us? And the parents cannot explain. The parents simply say, we do like this because, well, because your grandmother and grandfather do like this. And what are their children going to say? We don't want any part of this. We don't, it is not relevant to us. It is not important for us what grandmother in Maharashtra is saying. We are in Australia. So because the parents cannot explain the essence, the knowledge of why one should follow the traditions, one should follow the rituals, that produces a very extreme reaction in the children. The children feel embarrassed. My parents are following these dinosaur age activities, and they can't even tell you why they follow them. So that produces a very strong reaction in the children. Sometimes there is this saying that having a little bit of knowledge is worse than having no knowledge. Little bit of knowledge of the Kula Dharma, a little bit of knowledge of the traditions is often worse than no knowledge, because if you can't explain why you're doing what you're doing, then you produce in others such a negative reaction. Why should we blindly follow these things? We want to be free. So in this way, you can see that having some knowledge of the traditions, of the proper rituals, can have a negative effect if the essence is forgotten. Then you look on the Western side. Is the West the best? There is a disadvantage and an advantage. The great disadvantage is people are born in ignorance of what is the proper way for progressive human society. What is the advantage? That when they're presented with the authentic, genuine Vedic knowledge, they have no prior experience with it, so that their understanding becomes muddled. They are a blank slate, clear. They're not inheriting a huge baggage of preconceptions about what is the so-called Hindu way of doing things. They can hear what is authentic without any complications in the mind. I'll give you one example. For Western classical music, there's a famous school for piano, playing piano, in Vienna, Austria. And that famous school for teaching Western classical piano playing has two prices. One price of tuition is for if you have had piano lessons before, and the other price is if you've never had piano lessons. Who pays more? If you had piano lessons before, they charge you more because they have to unlearn you of all your concoctions. They have to free your mind of all the wrong ways of playing piano. Whereas when they're teaching someone who never had piano lessons before, the price is lower because the teacher doesn't have to battle with so many misconceptions. So that is the advantage of the West. Srila Prabhupada himself pointed that out. That if they can do all the wild things that they're doing without thought, as you saw in the exaggerations of the drama, if they can take the drugs and engage in relationships in so many unregulated ways, if they can do that without a thought, certainly then they can take what Krishna says without so much complication. That was Srila Prabhupada's genius, he saw. They have this do-anything spirit. No reservations. So why not surrender to Krishna with no reservations? If you can surrender to drugs or so many different kinds of relationships without hesitation, why not surrender to Krishna without hesitation? So that is the advantage. But of course, that advantage is also a disadvantage. Because without a proper culture, without a proper social stability, your human form of life can easily become destroyed. Your spiritual opportunities can easily become erased. So the family traditions, the Kula Dharma Sanatana, the eternal principles for elevating families, spiritually elevating families, these are essential. But that advantage that you have here in India becomes a disadvantage when you don't know why you're doing what you're doing and you follow these things blindly, and that leads to a very strong rejection. Familiarity produces contempt. Oh, we know all that stuff. This grandmother and grandfather stuff, we know all that stuff. Familiarity produces contempt. And in that way, you actually reject what is the greatest treasure, what is meant for the advancement of human society. When you forget that the goal of Dharma is to understand Krishna, to accept what Krishna says, just like Arjuna does at the end of Bhagavad Gita. When you forget that, then the whole system of progressive arrangements for family development becomes lost. Because no one knows the purpose. So basically, what Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna is, I'm going to remind you of the purpose of all this Dharma, all those activities, rituals, family principles. And how am I going to remind you of the purpose? By telling you to fight. By telling Arjuna to fight, Krishna is saying, the goal of Dharma is simply to do what I ask. The goal of all the family principles, the goal of all the rituals, is to get to the point where you say, Kadishye Vachanam Tava, Krishna, I will do what you say. Now we are living in a global society, whether we like it or not. Everyone throughout the world can have some understanding of what others are doing on the other side of the world. Very rapidly, society is changing everywhere. Let us say you're in the year 1850, and somehow that you were able to look from outer space at the planet Earth. What would you see if you looked when, for example, there was darkness over a great portion of the earth. You would only see two bright spots of light. Those bright spots of light would indicate cities that have a population of more than 1 million persons. In the year 1850, you'd only see two such bright spots of light if you could look at the earth from outer space and it was nighttime covering certain parts of the earth. You'd only see two such bright spots. One was London, the other was Beijing. Now, if you look from outer space at the earth, you'll see 450 of these bright spots of light. Now, more than 50% of human beings live in cities. By the middle of this century, supposedly the number will go up, the percentage will go up to 70% of human beings who live in cities. So everyone is knowing what everyone else is doing. The best way to live in this kind of global society is to combine the advantages from all the different parts of the world. The advantage of the East, particularly the advantage of India, is knowledge of how to live a balanced and progressive human life so that you can attain Krishna's mercy. The advantage of the West is that because there is no culture of stability there, you can immediately be open to something and do it with great enthusiasm. You can be very adventuresome, very opportunistic. Oh, that looks good. I'll take it immediately. It's more difficult to do that here, yes. Well, that looks good, but what will my family say? And so many considerations, right? Whereas in the West, this looks good. I don't care what my family says. What I do is none of their business. This is for me. I take it. Of course, if you are fortunate to come in contact with the best thing, to come in contact with Krishna, yes, it is very advantageous that immediately you can say, I just take it. I don't have to worry what my grandmother is thinking. I don't have to worry about what my village is thinking. I take it. That's the attractive part of the West. That adventuring spirit. Just immediately do what you want. That is an advantage if you're going to do the right thing. The problem, however, is without a stable social structure, you can easily be misled. You can easily... It's like driving a car at high speed. You could get to your destination quicker, but there's also a great chance that you will crash. So I hope you can understand now the relative advantages and disadvantages. When Srila Prabhupada began his preaching, as you know, he started in India, but at that time in India, in the 50s and 60s, it was very difficult for him to get any assistance. Of course, now things are different. So many young persons throughout India are taking up Krishna's instructions. But back in the 50s and 60s, Srila Prabhupada was having a difficult time. But when he went to the West, he found that he could speak, and immediately persons would act. Yes, let me follow Krishna's instructions. So Srila Prabhupada took advantage of that immediacy, that quickness. Yes, let's do it. You may know the slogan of one famous global maker of athletic shoes. Just do it. That's the essence of the West. Yeah. Just do it. So Srila Prabhupada said, okay, you have that attitude, just do it. Well then, just surrender to Krishna. Whereas at that time in India, when Srila Prabhupada was preaching in the 50s and 60s before he went to the West, it was the opposite of just do it. It was the everything was, Swamiji, yes, yes, but. We appreciate what you're saying, but. And Srila Prabhupada described how he would go to wealthy, aristocratic families, steeped in the traditions, very tradition-based, and Srila Prabhupada would request in the traditional way, you have five sons, please can you give me one of your sons, I'll train him as a brahmachari. And Srila Prabhupada described how the father would say, Swamiji, please, please, do not touch him. He's only meant for technology. Don't touch him. But when Srila Prabhupada went to the West, just do it. So Srila Prabhupada very brilliantly took advantage of that. If you can just do this, if you can just do that, if you can risk your life by taking intoxication, if you can risk your future by improper family affairs, if you can do all these things, then you can surrender to Krishna. Just do it. You have all heard of the pizza effect, right? Who hasn't heard of the pizza effect? Raise your hands. Most, who knows of the pizza effect? Raise your hand. Yeah. All right, I'll explain. Everyone knows what pizza is, yes? You may not know it, but pizza in Italy was considered a low-class food. Only poor people would eat pizza. The higher classes would never think to eat pizza. But then one year, somehow or other, some Italians brought pizza to the USA. And very quickly, in the USA, pizza became the favorite food, as it is to this day. It's the most, everyone's favorite food is pizza. But in Italy, where pizza comes from, pizza was looked down on as low class for poor people. Mm-hmm. But it went to the USA and became famous, number one. So then, what the Italians in the USA did was bring back the pizza to Italy, reintroduce pizza in Italy as the most popular American food. And so now in Italy, pizza is recognized as a topmost food for all classes of persons. But it had to go out. The pizza had to go outside of Italy to get fame and get acceptance. So that was Srila Prabhupada's strategy with Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita. He felt that in the 50s and 60s in India, no one was listening to him. He wanted to present Bhagavad Gita as it is. Present knowledge of Krishna as Krishna is. But he was not getting the reception that he wanted. So he went to the West with the knowledge of Krishna, made Krishna famous in the West, and then reintroduced the Krishna knowledge back into India by saying, just see, the Americans and Europeans, they're mad after Krishna. What about you? So that's the pizza effect. Although something comes from your area, you don't consider it important. But when it goes somewhere else to the other side of the world and becomes famous, then you take interest. Oh, yes, this is ours. Krishna is ours. What we want to do on a global level is to combine the traditions, the genuine traditions of life in India with the adventurousness and enterprising spirit of the West. In that way, we won't say whether East is best or West is best. Let's look at the whole global picture and how to combine the positive characteristics of all the areas of the world. So India has knowledge of how human society, human individuals should live in a progressive way, a balanced way, a way that gradually people can make progress toward the ultimate goal of life. The West doesn't have that knowledge. But the West has a very enterprising spirit, very just do it. So if you combine the two, the stability that life in India brings with the enterprising spirit that especially the USA brings, and especially New York. If you combine all that, then you have the best. The combination is the best. It's not that the East is the best or the West is the best. Krishna is for everyone. Just like the sun seems to rise in the East, but the sun is for everyone. The sun is for shining on everyone's head. Krishna is for all living entities. And we have a chance to see that happening right now on a global scale. So two things are necessary for the correction of our global civilization. First of all, in India, people need knowledge, spiritually scientific knowledge of why they were doing all these traditions that they're leaving behind now. What was the point? Why it's a great mistake to abandon these traditions. They need comprehensive spiritual understanding of the point of all the rituals. And then the West needs to understand that although it has such an outgoing, just do it spirit, without the stability of comprehensive spiritual knowledge, they're going to drive off the road. You may have a very fast car, but if you don't have deeply developed driving skills, you can crash. Your car may be so advanced, BMW, Porsche, Ferrari, but if you don't have self-control, even though the car is so advanced, you'll kill yourself with it. Whereas in India, at least in the villages, it seems, things are moving slowly, but people have a much more deep experience of how to live life in a simple way, so that ideally you can save time for your spiritual advancement. What is the point of racing so fast if you forget what is the purpose of your life? So that is the problem in the West. Just look how fast we are going. But where are you going? Don't worry. You can see, and I have seen, in the villages in India, everything is moving so slow, but even today, many people still have knowledge of where they're going, even though they're moving slowly. So isn't it better to move slowly and have some idea of where you're going than to move at breakneck speed and not have a clue of where you're going? So how do we combine that opportunistic, go-getting spirit of the West? How do you connect that with real stability, real knowledge? Then, when you combine the two, you have the award-winning combination. And that definitely can happen today. In fact, you're seeing it happen. You are living in very interesting times. As you continue to be a member of this spiritual community, you're going to see a global vision unfold. You're going to see how, once again, persons in India want to understand the knowledge behind the traditions. They want to understand the knowledge behind the rituals. They want to understand the essence. You'll be seeing that happen. At the same time, you'll see that particularly the younger generation in India will become more opportunistic and just do it. But they'll use that just do it spirit they're getting from the West to act on Krishna's instructions. So right before your eyes, you're going to see the combination of the best from all parts of the world. Yes, there is so much pressure on India now in terms of materialism, more than ever before. But also there are good things happening. That those fortunate persons who know the essence of the rituals, the knowledge behind all the traditions, when they add to that the initiative, the adventurous spirit of the West in terms of accepting and applying Krishna's instructions, those persons become very powerful. So you will be seeing that. It's a very exciting time for you to be a young person. you will see that you can combine the solid footing, the solid foundation that traditional life in India gives with the rapid movements that the West gives. Combine those two, and then you have the best of all worlds. So therefore, I don't say the East is best or the West is best. Take the best from both and make such a powerful combination that you can do. Thank you very much.
So, very thankful to Maharaj for giving such wonderful wisdom on both from the East and the West, and using the principle of Krishna from the East and just do it from the West and applying it. Thank you, Maharaj. So let us thank His Holiness Devamrit Maharaj by loudly chanting Revo! 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 So before we take few questions, there are a few announcements. So I'd like to welcome the VIPs that have come for our Prerna festival by loudly chanting Rebo! 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 Also those boys who have come to our Prerna festival today for the first time, jo aaj pehli baar aaye hain hamare youth festival mein, khade ho sakte udhar apne apne jagah pe. So all those boys who have come for the first time to our Prerna Youth Festival can kindly stand up in their places. So, thank you all of you for making this Prerna a beginning in your journey of spiritual life. So, we'd like to welcome to our family of youth at the Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Temple by loudly chanting, Revo! 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 So, kindly be seated. So, as you go down, there is a special counter for you where you will be served prasadam, and also in the Bhaktivedanta hall, and also there is a gifts that you can all receive it there. Also all of you have in IYS we have programs all over Bombay, so you all can connect to the local channels where we have our programs, this kind of programs, and be benefited. The next Prerna will be on August 8th. This is a little long gap because of exams period and vacations. So the next Prerna is on August 8th. That will be by His Grace Gauranga Prabhu. And we have our Facebook and Twitter and all online channels. The channel name is IWS Mumbai. So you can connect, follow, like. The next camp. Jai Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan ki. So we have a very interesting camp for all the 16 rounders devotees in Pune, ISKCON NVCC Pune. The dates are July 31st, August 1st and 2nd. So these are the dates for all the 16 rounders, the camp at ISKCON Pune. So the details will be available very shortly. Also today's Prerna services were handled by the volunteers from Balram Anand Prabhu and His Grace Rajaras Prabhu's team. So I'd like to thank them, although they are all downstairs, by loudly chanting, Revo! 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 The next Journey of Self-Discovery course at our temple will be on June 12 to 17. This is a systematic course about the science of Bhagavad Gita. You can all register at the inquiry desk or with your preacher. So now I'd like to invite any of the youth that may have questions on this topic for His Holiness Devamrit Swami Maharaj. You can raise your hand and mic will be passed on to you.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj, for a wonderful class. Maharaj, my question is, even after hearing so much from many senior devotees and many sincere devotees also, we get lots of association also. But still we are unable to, especially myself, unable to follow even regulative principles many times. we fall so much victim to bad temptations and all stuff. So how to, you know, sincerely follow this path actually and implement in our life?
To do anything in this world requires determination. Material life requires determination, and spiritual life requires determination. No one can say that they have no determination. Every one of you here can remember at least one time in your life when you made such a powerful effort to do something, to get something. There are, of course, many people in this world who have to make such a powerful effort simply to live day to day. So how can we say that we have no determination? The whole point of bhakti is to apply your determination for Krishna's pleasure. But you can't say you have no determination. You can look at any person's life and you can see that they have some ability to be very determined. The great change in our life comes when we are determined to follow Krishna's instructions, just as Arjuna said at the end of Bhagavad Gita. Kadishye vachanam tava. I'll do what you say. That's determination. If you're going to school, if you're working, you have to be determined. If you're trying to get through the traffic in Mumbai, you have to be determined. If you're trying to breathe in Delhi, you have to be determined. So how can you say you have no determination? Any New Yorker knows that to live in New York City, you have to be the topmost determined person. That's why they're very proud. We can handle anything. We can deal with anything. We are from New York. We are so determined. So why? Why won't we apply that determination to Krishna? So what I'm saying is that you search within yourself and see how indeed you are so determined in life. And take that determination and apply it to following Krishna's instructions. But you cannot say that you have no determination. It's all about where the determination is being applied. Anything else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the wonderful lecture. Maharaj, can you please tell me, can spiritual life and material advancement can go in hand in hand? Like as you said, when we get a spiritually liberated or a spiritually active, isn't that a material passion or material desires get faded away? And why, as you said, spiritual life is more important than material life? Why it is like that?
The substance is more important than the shadow. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is teaching you how you should take care of your material needs while at the same time understanding that your most important purpose in life is to take care of your spiritual needs. You are not the body, you are not the mind, yet you have to take care of your body and mind. You have to take care of your equipment. Krishna is the master balancer. That is the yoga balance. How to handle your material affairs and your spiritual affairs simultaneously. Krishna can teach you how to do that because both the material and spiritual energies come from Krishna. So he is the best one to teach you how to handle both energies, how to balance both energies, because they all come from him. So that is the real meaning of Yogeshwara, the master of yoga power. Krishna Yogeshwara easily handles all his energies. And Krishna is willing to teach you how to deal with Krishna's energies. Krishna is willing to give you an advanced degree in spiritual and material engineering. This is the KIT, the Krishna Institute of Technology. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate. Krishna says, I am the origin of everything, material and spiritual. Everything emanates from me. So, Krishna is the best source of knowledge and technique for how to handle all of his energies. He's asking Arjuna to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra. Obviously, to fight, Arjuna has to have material abilities, yes? But Krishna told him, Mamanusma yujyam cha, fight and think of me. So although Arjuna was fighting with topmost expertise, at the same time, he acted in pure bhakti. Pure Krishna consciousness. So being Krishna's devotee doesn't mean that you execute your affairs in a very lazy and irresponsible way. That is the materialist's false assumption about spiritual life. Oh, you'll say, Krishna is the doer, Krishna does everything, and you'll simply just sleep all day. They used to say that in the USA, I remember in the 70s. Oh, in India they have this philosophy that's very fatalistic, that you have your karma, you have your destiny, it's going to come to you no matter what. And therefore they don't do anything. They used to say that in the USA in the 70s. They don't say that anymore. Why? Because you know who has all the IT jobs in the USA. I remember when I was a little boy in the 50s in New York. My mother, at dinner, she would say, make sure you finish everything on your plate, dear. Remember the starving people in India. Now, what does she say? Oh, those Indians, they're so smart. They take all the best jobs. Things have changed. But still, I've seen even people here have this misconception that if I take up spiritual life, my my college career will be spoiled. My workplace advancement will be spoiled. This is a total misconception. Do you think that Krishna in Bhagavad Gita told Arjuna, Arjuna, I will drive the chariot. You stay in the back and sleep. No, Krishna told Arjuna to function at the peak of expertise while thinking of Krishna. So that is bhakti. It is the highest way of being active, of being dynamic. All right?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thanks for your genuine lecture. My question is, generally so many people in India think that spirituality is a barrier to technical advancement. So how to remove this misconception?
How to remove that misconception, he's asking, that so many people, he says, in India think that spiritual life is a barrier to advancement, material advancement. How to convince them otherwise? You bring them here. Here they will see so many qualified persons who are brahmacharis, who are grihastas, so many professional abilities, so many skills, and yet they are so active in Krishna's service. They need to see examples. Example is the best teacher. Of course, as I said before, if you simply read Bhagavad Gita as it is, you'll understand by looking at Arjuna's example. He's the most competent person. Yet he's fully dependent on Krishna. It is all there in Bhagavad Gita, but people need the association of devotees to actually see what is right there in front of their eyes. As you heard in the introduction about my tiny self. The month before I graduated from Yale University, I went to see my dean of studies. And I just told him straightforwardly, I said, I don't see a place for myself in materialistic society as it is today. He didn't blink an eye. He just looked at me, completely straight face. You are a Yale man. You will influence the world. I thought, what is he talking about? I don't plan to do anything for the world. I'm a New Yorker. I plan simply to satisfy my senses. I tried trying to understand how to benefit the world. I studied so many different fields, so many different courses of study just to find a solution to humanity's problems, and I didn't find it. In the beginning, when I began my studies there, I told my professors I wanted to find the solution to human problems, the best solution. So they said, all right, you can study whatever you like for 4 years. Anything you want, you can study. Don't worry that you have to specialize. This was considered the topmost way of education. only for the topmost students. You have complete freedom. You study whatever you want. You don't worry. You have a Yale education. Just study whatever you like. You're looking for the topmost solutions to human problems? Well, they said, study whatever you like, and when you find the solution, please come and tell us. Because their attitude was, there is no complete solution to human problems. Human problems will just go on and on and on. But they said, you're young, you think that there's some hope, so you study whatever you like, and if you find the great solution, let us know. And of course, after studying so many different things, this is at a time when knowledge of engineering and applied science in the USA was considered not the topmost. The topmost students were studying human problems, social problems. I remember maybe 7 years ago at a Prerana festival when I mentioned that studying human society to find the solution instead of studying applied science. Everyone laughed. Oh. That's only, I was told that at that time in India, it was only for the lesser students. They would study social problems. Right? The advanced students, they would simply study technology. So when I mentioned it, everyone laughed. Oh. You didn't study technology. What is wrong with you? Now I have read, though. In the Times of India, I've read, everything is changing because of environmental problems, social problems, psychological problems. The intelligent people in India are understanding that simply by technology they cannot live. So my point in explaining this is, to let you know that, of course you already know it, but I don't want you to forget, that knowledge of Krishna is the most practical. It is nothing to be ashamed of. It is something to be the most proud of. You are dealing with the world's most comprehensive spiritual knowledge and applied spiritual technology. Incomparable. That was my reaction. After graduating from Yale and beginning to read Bhagavad Gita as it is, I said, this is incomparable. I have studied under the best intellects in the world, and I have never seen anything come anywhere near what I'm reading in Bhagavad Gita as it is. So it's a little funny for me to hear about these fears that if I too much study Bhagavad Gita, I'll lose my material competitive edge. I'll become stagnant and slow in the workplace. I won't be able to do my studies anymore, all because of reading Bhagavad Gita. The Hare Krishna mantra will slow down my material dynamics. I have to tell you, this is foolish paranoia. The first class person is the bhakti yogi, the Krishna conscious person. Expert. That is one of the 25 characteristics of a devotee. Expert. The devotee has expertise. Because we want to give Krishna the best. So whatever skills you have, whatever field, whatever profession you have, you can use that expertise somehow for Krishna's pleasure. Just like Arjuna fought for Krishna. To cover the world with Krishna's knowledge, we need all kinds of expertise, all kinds of skills. Even technology. So please don't have this fear. It's irrational that, oh, my material endeavors will suffer if I become too spiritual. Remember, who is the source of the material energy and the spiritual energy? You're taking your instructions, your knowledge from that source. Therefore, you are in the most advantageous position. Anything else?
Sorry, there are a lot of hands, but the hands of the clock are also ticking.
Yes.
So now let us again express our gratitude to His Holiness Devamrita Swami Maharaj by loudly chanting, Revo! 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 So now let us all participate in roaring dancing kirtan led by His Holiness Devamrita Swami Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.